Well, hey everyone, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. I'm Adam Blue, which, every week I like to sit in front of my camera and talk about Gundam. And luckily I have someone to help me do that because it is lonely when you're by yourself. And that is Steven at Midnight Hatter. What's going on, man?
Oh, you know the usual. I mean, what? Almost 150 episodes strong. You have confirmed that you are alive and things are rolling. So this is good.
No, it's great. And, you know, someone mentioned in the chat about floods because, Texas right now raining all day, even like this morning when the sun is normally super bright. It was so dark that the street lamps were on. And, it's just been raining the entire time. I like it, though.
It's good napping weather.
It's good what?
Good napping weather.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true. Hey, Steven wearing his retro shirt on. What shirt?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So this is the old Midnight Hatter logo from the olden days before I met Adam and before I realized what being a YouTuber means.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, really, I was just copying you, but okay. No, that's pretty cool. Yeah, because I had your show yesterday. For those that don't know, Steven and I also do this on his channel on Wednesdays. Another
I love
good
the companion shows. Like I love how it's almost like, you know, a serial, you're basically getting two episodes a week of
part two.
TV show.
No, and it's funny. Even on your episode yesterday, you were bringing up designs of Gundam because the Mark II and how awesome like the Mark II kind of looks and is in terms of like the best Gundam designs, I guess. And you were asking like, what are your top five? And it made me think, you know, how much it really is just UC stuff. So today, by the end of the show, potentially, Steven, I want us to each have in our minds five non-UC suits that we like a lot. I know you mentioned some yesterday, but I feel like they deserve it.
And you know what? That's a great challenge for the two of us because both of us tend to be like UC Gundam grognards. And I know it gets us a lot of flack because there's a plenty of Seed fans on the Gundam Explained Discord server and things like that. So, you know, I think that that's a good benchmark for you and I is like, you know, can you guys really get outside of UC and talk about, you know, the rest of Gundam, the Gundam that everybody else is watching?
I know it's crazy too. And it was one of those things where, after watching the Seed Freedom movie, which the video is up with Ian and Ashley, where we talked about our opinions on the movie because we had all seen it. And it's like, you know what? I was able to kind of watch the movie without caring that, this isn't UC. It was more like, you know what? I'm just excited to actually see like this limited release movie in theaters. And it's kind of like cutting edge animation, you would think, you know, and it did look excellent. So I think that really helped me then be like, you know what? Yeah, let's talk more positive, try to bring up some more content around that stuff.
Yeah. And I think that with the Seed Freedom movie, at least like I didn't get to see it, but just watching some of the trailers and stuff, it seemed like they kind of fixed some of the face designs and things like that. The things that kind of turned us off to.
No, they made some of the faces worse. There are some.
They made it worse. I've heard your criticisms and I've decided I'm going to be worse.
Because like they did something with the lips. For the characters that have those big glamour shots with the eyes. Fillers. Yeah, they do a thing with the lips to make them look much more full. And it's like, but okay, that's the style, you know, whatever.
I guess so.
But then someone in Discord was bringing up, well, then what did you think about, you know, like American cartoons? Like, I think Hey Arnold was brought up in The Simpsons. And I was like, okay, good point. I think, like, I might have watched Hey Arnold. But a lot of times with those cartoons, the tone is a little zanier. You're not really supposed to be grounded to anything. So I can see why. Even though I think some of that stuff doesn't look that great, why they have zany, like sometimes abstract animation is done well. Like I think Dexter's Laboratory or that artist, I forget his name.
Gandhi Tartofsky.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. That abstract style works. It just for some reason, he knows how to make sure that each shape works good. The scales work good with each other when everything's abstract.
Or like Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, you know, that is a good one. Yeah.
There's the old saying that like the hallmark of a great character design is if you can identify them by their silhouette, which obviously Pokemon took that to its logical conclusion, because you remember every episode of Pokemon that came out, it was like, who's that Pokemon? And you had like a silhouette of a Pokemon. It's like, oh, it's Gengar. Yay.
Wow.
You know, so obviously, like, that's a design practice that's very popular. And so even with Hey Arnold, with Ren and Stimpy, you have all of these cartoon characters that are heavily stylized, not because they're bad, not because they don't understand character proportions and human proportions and things like that. It's because they're trying to create an easily identifiable, iconic character through that design principle. So
that's really a cool thing to think about. The silhouette, because I even think modern designs, and I'll use like more recent, like Avengers movies. You can't really, it's like there's, it's almost like too samey, or they have to have like the same seam lines that don't serve any functional visual purpose.
Yeah.
And so if, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but if I was to ask you, you know, could you name what the Avengers costume looked like in this movie? You know, like this, like off the top of your head, you know, yeah, it's not that recognizable.
I recently watched a YouTube video where someone was talking about like the bad guys in Marvel movies compared to like 80s action movies. And I think we've talked about this before, specifically in reference to RoboCop, where it's like in the first RoboCop movie, all of Boddicker's men are like these bombastic characters. You have the guy with the crazy facial hair that gets melted by acid. And then you have like the guy that has the sniper rifle and like the pompadour. You know, each character has their own flair and their own style. But then if you look at like Marvel movies, you have what, like generic alien number 367. You have generic SWAT team guy with a face mask on. You don't have any like there's nothing to really sell.
I remember we did talk about this before, because I brought up Blind Fury as an example, where the bad guy had these henchmen, but each henchman was their own like character, even though they didn't necessarily have an arc, but they were recognizable. You know, another movie that does that is From Dusk Till Dawn.
I was gonna say, between Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino, both very big character directors, like, I mean, Kill Bill has like, you know, all of the sub lieutenants, right? You've got like Oren Ishii and Bud.
Yeah.
And so it's like you almost have like these boss fights, and it gives it a very video game feel, which I know you love. I love it. It's
that, you know what? That's you named a lot of things from the Evil Dead franchise, where Sam Raimi takes side characters, especially in Army of Darkness, but like gives them more to do than to just react or fill in. It's like they're doing it in a way that's like, oh, I'm going to remember that character. Like,
And you know what? Isaac in chat says it the best, because he says each henchman was their own character, just like the Zeon aquatic mobile suits. That's a perfect example, because it's like, think about like Ramba Rawl, you know, like if the main bad guy of Mobile Suit Gundam is Degwin Zabi or Giren Zabi, you know, depending on your perspective, whatever the case may be. You have this cast of like sub lieutenants and people that Amuro has to fight to get to the final boss, where it's like the Black Tri-Stars, they have this bombastic personality. Ramba Rawl is like this, you know, staunch officer. Makuve has his only, or, you know, Makuve, if depending on your pronunciation. Oh. But Makuve, you know, he's got this like personality about preserving art and history and things like that. There's all of these rich characters that make the story so much more interesting. I think you could really set the bar of any movie or TV show. How good are the bad guys?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's almost like Gundam took that formula of bad guy of the week and kind of made it, you know, bad guy of the, I don't know, because it's like they will be introduced and you'll learn about them, but it won't be just that episode and then they're gone. I mean, that does happen, but it's usually like there's enough where they are part of everything, you know. And it even reminds me of like Power Rangers, when after watching, you know, that original series, and then like later in life being like, I don't remember this bad guy, but he was in one of the, because every episode had a different bad guy.
Right.
So there could be one or two. It's like, I don't actually remember that one. Yeah. So that's another neat thing to think about with the, again, I want to make a story someday. So I like to grab these little bits. The silhouette thing, I think, is a cool thing to keep in mind. Yeah, also, you know, the world building, how that works out. And then, yeah, the bad guys always having bad guys being like, and so again, that's Gundam does it right. Cause in Zeta, you know, you have Quattro, like,
yeah,
just to get to that point is good storytelling.
Yeah. And to your point, like Zeta does it really well, where it's like Scirocco is introduced like in this brief moment where they're trying to get down to Earth and Scirocco shows up in the Masala. And it's like, you're like, who is this guy? He fights them for a little bit, then disappears. And then what is it, like 10, 13 episodes later, he comes back and he's the leader of the Titans. And like, you know, hey.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And that reminds me, you know, going back to Seed Freedom, how there is, between the three movies, every character goes on a wild arc. Even by that third, or that the two series, the movie, and then I know there's that other CE 70 something, but like you really see characters kind of being flipped on their heads, but it's because there's a situation happening that makes them vulnerable. And so, yeah, I gotta again give it to Freedom. It does a lot of good storytelling.
And that's in the rich history of Gundam, right? Because it's like when you first get introduced to characters like Kai Shiden, you know, you're like, oh, who's this kind of cowardly guy that's letting everybody on the colony get killed and stuff like that. But then when he gets his own arc where, you know, it's like, oh, well, he becomes friends with this Miharu character and, you know, he becomes romantically interested in this character who turns out to be a Zeon spy. Oh, spoiler, you know, it's a cartoon from the 70s. You guys will be all right. you know, Kai ends up becoming, you know, a fully fleshed character as a result of these experiences that he's having. And yeah. It's one of those reasons that I think that television shows that have like a full runtime of like, you know, 30, 50 episodes tend to be better at doing that than like a 1.5 hour movie, 90-minute, 120-minute movie.
Yeah. And sometimes, and I would think maybe the latest Shogun is a good example, how there's not many, or even the X-Men animated, it's only 10 episodes. But it's giving you enough character development to where, like, you couldn't probably cut it down to a 2-hour movie. So that's I think, the trick. It's like, maybe if something is not a movie, you know, maybe make it two movies, a part one and part two that are released within, you know, why not the same time or within a month or two? It's to kind of tell people, here's one digestible chunk. You know what? It will be interesting to see, not yet, but later on with Rebel Moon, how that all works out. Because there's, you know, Zack Snyder released the required cut Netflix wanted.
Right.
And then he's like, okay, well, I have my version coming out soon. And then there's the sequel. And then it's going to be all put together. And like, for instance, with me, the Justice League version he came out with was amazing, but nothing that would ever be in a movie theater.
No, for sure.
But was amazing. And that's almost the thing. It's almost like his storytelling is one to defy conventions in filmmaking, and the studios are just like, I can't do that.
And it's a shame because, well, it is and it isn't, because with Zack Snyder in particular, like the premise of Rebel Moon is kind of preposterous to me. That, you know, this like group of turn of the century style farmers can supply a sci-fi army with, you know,
enough. Yeah, that part I had trouble. I thought maybe I wasn't understanding the plot.
Just like logistically, I'm like, that doesn't sound like it makes sense. Like I understand that for the point of the story, you're kind of trying to create that underdog element of it. But, you know, I think that with a story like Star Wars, obviously that the Rebel Alliance in Star Wars is much more believable than the Rebel faction in Rebel Moon.
It seems like he went with the extremes, like super, super underground rebel, barely anything they can do. And then like a super powerful intergalactic, you know, and it's
Right. But that said, I you know, loved Zack Snyder's take on the Watchmen comic book. Honestly, hot take alert. I think that Zack Snyder's narrative in the Watchmen movie is better than the comic book for two reasons. One, because it leaves out that stupid pirate story that's going on in the background. Because there's like the kid that's like reading a pirate story. And so it's like every chapter of the Watchmen, you're having to read this pirate story. That's like, oh, it's an allegory for the rest of it. And it's like, okay, I don't really care about that. And then secondly, and spoilers again, for anybody who hasn't read or watched the Watchmen, you know, the premise of the Watchmen is that they kidnap all these artists and geneticists, and they try to artificially generate an alien that is the existential threat to Earth that's going to unite Russia and the United States. It's like, okay, we're not competing in an arms race anymore. We're fighting against aliens. I mean, yes, that makes sense, sort of, but what makes even more sense is what they did in the movie where they make Dr. Manhattan the bad guy, where it's like, okay, we have a walking nuclear bomb that's saying...
I remember you explained that to me, that, and because that ties more closely with the whole superhero idea, especially of what Watchmen was doing with superheroes in the first place. Yeah, that's a good point.
But
no, that's cool. No, that's cool. It's interesting when these artist slash creators where they're making something in a medium that's not necessarily theirs, you know? And I think we bring this up because Tomino, it was that, like, you know, animation was a way to get his story in front of more people.
Definitely.
And it's interesting. And I think even George Lucas, his thing too was he has cool ideas for stories, but it's more of he's interested in how to portray it on screen with special effects rather than it being like, oh, this is a masterful film construct, you know, like of,
and oh my gosh, knocked my desk over. That made me so angry. I'm like, George Lucas. No, that goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, is that creativity really thrives with limitations.
Yeah.
And I think that George Lucas's best work came before the advances of CGI, not because CGI in and of itself is bad, but because, you know, George, just kind of as a person, he's always trying to kind of push the boundaries of what we can do with special effects. And he's like, oh, it's okay if it looks bad on tape because we'll fix it in post. Like, we're going to use the latest and greatest digital editing techniques. And it's like, yeah, you can do that. But wouldn't it be so much better if you just got the shot right the first time?
Yeah. 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 There's a lot of that. Yeah. That you get. So I think there are some filmmakers out there that know how to balance that well, like Quentin Tarantino. It's almost for him, there's the craft of the narrative, the storytelling, and how it's portrayed on film, as well as his artistic flair. No, cool stuff. And I feel like I could go on forever, especially because of the, you know, the Gundam live action movie that we still haven't heard anything about.
Right. I mean, they only announced it like when you started your YouTube channel, which is like,
yeah. I mean, no, it's been years, but you know, speaking of other things that they should do, I wanted to actually talk about a concept we've discussed on here before. And I wanted to kind of think it out a little bit more. And that is going back to the idea of amiibos, you know, in terms of, so there's this Gundam metaverse, and we've spoken about like using the Gunpla, you know, for something else, like a video game or something. And I was thinking the other day about amiibos, because actually I was looking into so there's barely any Castlevania action figures out there, but they have amiibo. And I was debating, and I was like, I don't need amiibo.
Yeah. Castlevania explained when.
Yeah, I know. No, but what's interesting though is, I was thinking about how amiibos, how long they've been around. They keep making them for newer games. And it's like, what? The item itself is almost cross-compatible with so many different things. Like it reminds me of like the Skylanders that came out. And it's like,
oh my gosh, I remember those.
Yeah, it's Skylanders, but it only works on the Skylanders game, which wasn't bad. It would come out with new games that you can use new ones, but the thing with Nintendo was like, well, any Nintendo game. Like, usually their first party games would have something and new ones for that. And I feel like the Skylanders
thing was with that, right? Like, where it's like, you know, and it's a shame that they didn't do this more with Tears of the Kingdom, but with Breath of the Wild, like all of the amiibos that you could scan for Breath of the Wild gave something that were thematically relevant to the amiibo that you scanned, which I thought was absolutely beautiful.
I would do my dailies in Breath of the Wild with the
Boop. Give me my fish, my meat, my
exactly. That was a lot of fun, and it's interesting because with like, Nintendo can have all their first party games like continue to pump out a new one for someone to buy or collect, but then also to use in game. And you know, with the Gundam, there's that thing where it's not like Gundam is one video game property; it's actually multiple video game properties that are all different genres. And so sometimes you can be lost, not only as a gamer, but also a Gundam fan, because there could be these games that you never would try because, well, you know, the Extreme Versus games, that's not a game I would play, or GBO2, I wouldn't play that, but maybe SD Gundam or Gunpla, you know, one of the GB Gundam Breaker games.
Yeah.
But something that would kind of help thread it all together, and again, this is something they're trying to achieve with the multiverse, but almost like jumping too far ahead to try to achieve it. You know, like we talk about with video games, like we have a video game idea, but then sometimes we'll think too far. It's like, no, let's execute
the original idea before we start adding features. And
I mean, and so what they could be doing right now is, you know, right now you can go into Target and buy G-Frame, Gundam Universe, even a Gunpla, like even the little light up Gundams. Like you could go to Target and buy some Gundam thing. They could start coming out with amiibo style things like little statues. They don't move. Maybe they're better detailed that you could then scan for any game. Let's say they came out with like the Ariel, and the other thing you have to keep in mind is, you know, does every thing you use have a scan technology? You know, that's the other thing. Right. But luckily, like with phones and accounts, you could have some sort of Bandai Namco Gundam account that then you scan your items. So then part of your account is you have this DLC.
I was going to say, most of us already have Bandai Namco accounts because of like the video games.
Yeah.
You know, you brought up a very good point where I think that it's kind of a weakness of the Bandai management of not just Gundam, but all of their brands, is that their product selection is way too diversified. You know, you have like the Gundam artifacts, you have the 1/400th scale miniature figures, you have the Gunpla, you have, well, and the Gunpla alone is split into master grade, high grade, entry grade, real grade. You know, you've got several different models of each individual mobile suit. You know, there's so many different lines and so many different, types of figurines that they make, whether it's a model kit or just like an action figure, mobile suit in action, Gundam Universe, whatever the case may be. They have way too many things that they cannot consolidate any of it onto any platform, because I mean, what would you do? Like, is the same person that buys a Gundam Artifact Mark II going to buy the amiibo version of the Mark II in order to get the perk? Or do you just make like the artifact, you know, model kits? They're not even like, they're not superposable. No. They come in one color, so you have to paint them yourself. So why not make that an amiibo statue and you just include the NFC chip base that you glue the figure to? Like, I don't know.
You do bring up something interesting, because another metric of, you know, getting a consumer's time and money is some video game publishers were realizing that you can't, and this is with the new Assassin's Creed, they're not releasing it on PS4. It's because on PS4, people are just playing Fortnite or Minecraft or a game they already have. It's if someone was going to buy the new Assassin's Creed, they're saying that most likely it would be someone that would be buying a new console. So that's very interesting that they, and so I think about that too, with like Gundam and Gunpla. It's like, okay, how much do you want to divide the attention of your fan base, the market that split up into multiple categories? There's the Gunpla, there's the video games, there's people that are watching the movies and shows. I think they do a good job of staggering releases of the shows and movies, so that's not a problem. I even think with the games for the most part, but it's the collectibles that I think that there's opportunity there to make it all a little more cohesive.
Don't get me wrong. I love this Gundam Zeta head that was gifted to me by our mutual friend Shirt Lad. Like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
But
you wish there was something more you could be doing with it.
Right. It's a gashapon, and it's going to sit on my shelf until I decide to put LEDs in it. It's like,
well, another neat thing is with video game controllers, the third-party controllers are bigger now, and there's things now where you can, when you buy a controller, you can scan it, and then that company has an app where you're collecting all the variants and the different versions of the controllers. It's like, instead of Bandai jumping into, okay, this is only going to happen when we get the metaverse working and we need to get that technology, they could just start with what they already have. I mean, even with the Gundam Universe stuff in stores, it would have a code for GBO2. So I think the logistics of getting the figures in front of people's eyes and store shelves is they can already do that.
Yeah.
It's now, I think, the gaming part is next. And I'm just afraid with this Gundam Breaker 4.
Tying it all together.
No, and I'm afraid with the Gundam Breaker 4, like I said, because they started doing this push for the pre-order and saying, okay, there's going to be more bonuses now if you pre-order. I think there's going to be more new starting stuff, parts. And then they pushed another video recently that has the tone of Helldivers and Starship Troopers because they're trying to base it off that, which is not, you know, the way you go, but okay. And so this makes me think, okay, are they maybe seeing lower sales for Gundam Breaker 4? I mean, just think of, you know, Ubisoft just canceled Heartland, which was already had alpha tests a year ago, or closed betas.
Yeah. I mean, you can only speculate on the kind of decisions being made at that level. But it's hard not to imagine that there is a financial component to these decisions. You know, there has to be, right? Like, you don't just cancel a game or you try to push the marketing in one way or the other because of, you know, like there's a financial component tied to it.
Exactly. Because sometimes we don't see them push things that they should. And it's like, why aren't you promoting Cuckoo's Doan's Island English on Crunchyroll?
Well, yeah, or Battle Alliance. Like, you know, I think that if there had been more of a, more showcases of the gameplay in Battle Alliance. That's one of the things that you and I have talked about where, like, that game plays fantastically.
Yeah.
It's just the SD look of it turned a lot of people off of it.
Yeah. And it's funny, you read the Steam reviews and that's what people complain about. And it's like, interesting, you know?
Right. Clearly, you didn't play it, but, but yeah, and you and I have talked about this in private where it's like, you know, some of the marketing efforts geared towards, like, you know, various partnerships, things like the, Ash, I'm going to keep ripping on the F1 partnership because it's like, you know, while that did increase a lot of exposure for Gundam, you know, how many F1 fans are buying Gunpla?
And if they were, they'd be like, oh, I want to get that model kit. And then they look up and realize, no, that's not for sale. That was just something made.
It was a promotional piece. Yeah. So, you know, but conversely, you know, I basically built my whole YouTube career off of making a tabletop role-playing game based around Gundam, right? And the number one thing on my Discord server, everyone always brings it up, is like, oh, how can we play this with Gunpla?
Yeah.
And it's like, there you go. If you were to release a tabletop game, whether it was a role-playing game or like a, you know, like a BattleTech type game where it's, you know, that type of thing. And fans have done this. Like, you know, you have Gundam Skirmish, you have Mobile Frame Zero. People use that sometimes. There's a Palladium Rift version of a Gundam tabletop game. There's so many fan creations for Gundam tabletop games where people are like, I want to play this with my Gunpla, that the obvious marketing implications of doing that is like you sell the game and then you sell the Gunpla to go with the game. Like it's.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it. And it's interesting because during the GBO2 days, I guess it's early to mid lifespan, they were doing that a little bit with like a Gundam Universe figure would come out or a premium Bandai.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like there's that, again, we're saying you got to like connect the dots. It's like, okay, there's the figure, here's the game, but make it where they need to be with each other. And I think because a lot of times
there was the Gather Road GM, right, in GBO2.
Yeah.
And I think that was a perfect pairing. I think it just came too little too late.
Yeah.
They should have done that at launch.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah. And, you know, because sometimes when if I'm at Target and I see a Gundam, it's like, should I buy this? It's like, I really have enough and I have some builds I haven't done yet. But it's not like I'm saying, well, this actually does then allow me in Gundam Breaker 4 to then have these parts. You know, it's like I can't do any of that. I think like it's a very important thing because, again, they seem to be going too hard into, well, let's make it where you build a Gunpla for real and then the metaverse is a battle. And it's like we already have collectibles that we could be using, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember when Pokemon Stadium originally came out on the N64, and the huge selling point of that was it was like, hey, you can take your Game Boy cartridge and take the Pokemon that you've been playing in 2D and battle against other people in 3D. Total game changer, right? You know, the technology is there where you can do that with Gunpla. It would be interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that comes sooner than them really trying to perfect the metaverse is what I'm trying to say. I think the thing is with, and again, this only came up because I was looking for Castlevania collectibles. I came across the Castlevania Amiibo and it's like, well, I don't really need to use this, but man, thinking about all the Gundams I like to buy, if I could then do something more with all this digital Gundam content out there.
And this is something we talked about on my show a couple weeks ago, is like the democratization of these kind of digital technologies, NFC technology, and like Arduino and stuff like that. You know, I spoke about it in reference to just the Tony box, right? But like, it's the NFC chips in the Tonys are the exact same NFC chips that Nintendo uses for Amiibos.
And that are in most phones also.
Yeah, most phones. So it's like, why not? If Nintendo were smart, they would actually release like generic Amiibos that people could program with their own content the same way that Tony does with their.
Yeah. And that would
Tonys.
That would be part of how Nintendo tries to have these creative initiatives within their games, like either Labo or Mario Maker, having like, a custom Amiibo where maybe it comes blank and you actually do paint it. But also you're programming it for use in, you know, Smash Brothers, or maybe you can carry it and you're almost like maybe collecting trophies that are tied to your Amiibo or something.
Yeah, you could do so many fun things with that. So,
yeah, no, that's cool stuff. So, let's hope they do something like that. Okay, next up, another thing, you know, again, this is based off of our conversation we had yesterday, and I wanted to kind of talk about, you know, a number of, it could be five or whatever, designs outside of UC that we like. So, I mean, this is specifically between Steven and Adam, who mainly just like UC. What are designs we like outside of UC?
Now, do you have some that you've come kind of loaded with?
Yeah, I do. And I will start. I will say and I might need help with some of them, but the Impulse, I think, when Shin was using it. Like,
yeah.
And that's kind of cheating because it's very UC-like. But I wanted to start with that because it's UC-like, but it's not in UC. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Impulse. The Impulse is probably my favorite compared to like the Justice and the Freedom, you know, the other main character mobile suits, main character Gundams, I should say, from Seed. But yeah, you know, what's interesting about the Impulse is it's similar to like the Astray, where those are the most UC-inspired designs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, excluding things like the Dom Trooper and the Goof Ignited, which are very like obvious callbacks. Like those aren't. And honestly, to me, it's like I prefer the original Goof to the Goof Ignited. And I mean, the Dom Trooper is very. Sometimes I even mix up the Dom Trooper with the
standard. I know what you mean.
But yeah, there are some Seed designs that are very heavily informed by UC. And I think that the Impulse and the Astray are definitely two of them.
Yeah, you know what? And another one, too, that I consider cheating, but it's that Murasame Kai from Freedom that looks like a Zeta and an RX 78 combined. I need to remember to buy the model kit. The model kit doesn't look as good. And I might need to do a comparison on that. I find it interesting. The proportions of the model kit are nothing like the ones in the movie. It has shorter, stockier legs.
So nuts.
Yeah.
Like, especially with things like the Tall Geese. The Tall Geese is one of those mobile suits that has like really thick legs and like it's kind of chunky in the anime. But then the model kit version is kind of skinny. And the Ariel was like that too with Witch from Mercury. Yeah.
And like, people I do love that trick look to like turn the hips or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, then speaking of Ariel, that would be in my top five. I like that because it, not thinking in terms of Gundam, I think that's just a cool like mech design, not the rebuild, but
okay, that's fair.
The first one, and with the shield bits on, to it gives it more like I feel like that's a really cool like modern combat robot look.
I think what if you're looking for like modern combat and like realistic grounded robot, the first one that comes to mind for me is the Tieran from
Double. Oh yeah, that is
like that really thing cool. Looks so freaking cool, and it makes me so sad that it's in 00 because like I hate 00.
Wait, so you hate 00? Okay, this is something else I don't think we've ever discussed. Because I don't talk about 00 too much.
But no.
I don't think any suit in that show looks good, but I love 00 a lot. That's like
interesting.
Okay. Right below main UC for me. Yeah, the next AU's got to be 00.
Interesting.
I really like the music, and I like how it's kind of the same story as Gundam, but it kind of does the seed stuff and the wings. It kind of mixes.
Yeah. I was going to say it's got a lot of wing influence to it where it's like, you know, the war criminal Gundams coming to save humanity.
Speaking of wing, I would say that I like the wing. Now, I don't remember which version this is. It's one that I see online a lot that has blue and like an orange. It's like maybe supposed to be yellow, but it's more of an orange.
So is that the... It's probably one of the Verka wings, right?
Maybe. Yeah, I bet it's something. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It is the Verka. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just says wing. It doesn't say, like, custom.
Now, I see in chat, Isaac says the Turn A Gundam is also a good one. I have to give a shout-out to my boy Turn A, although specifically, the model kit I'm holding here is Build Fighters Turn A Shin Gundam. So it's the customized one that instead of having a mustache has like side fins on its face. I love this design.
That's actually a good example. I think in Turn A, a lot of those designs are really cool. It's cool to see like Tomino. I think he recognizes design, but he also recognizes how obscure things can get without making sure it has to look like a Gundam or something. You know what I mean? Like, even the bad guys in that, I think they're like an X or something. The name, I forget.
Sumos.
What's that?
Well, there's the Turn X and there's like the Sumos Sumo was the original design of the Turn A Gundam. And
that might
like
be what I was thinking then.
Round dome head. And
That's a good one too. And okay. So yeah, the wing, the Verka wing, I this is, again, this isn't out of context of me wanting to have a grounded military looking Gundam. This is just cool looking robot. So it's the wing, it's the impulse, the aerial. I don't really care yet. As for right now, anything in IBO, even Gundam 00, even though I don't care about any of those suits, but I like the show a lot.
Now, you said yesterday that one of the criteria for you as far as mobile suit designs is like the backpack.
Oh, good point.
So, to me, one of the best looking backpacks is actually like the Infinite Justice and the way it's got like a wing suit that kind of...
Oh, that folds up
that, or whatever? Like, folds up and then he can like ride on it and stuff. How do you feel about that kind of stuff?
I like that because there's even that... oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. There's that other Seed unit that's like the mass produced one that has.
Oh, yeah, the Wyndham.
Yes, yes. I like that idea because I feel like that is something that would have been explored more in UC because I feel like that's more of a theoretical technology that could be used, you know. And so I think it's cool that Seed kind of doubles down I don't know, on that a whole lot. Whereas like UC will have like a Corvette booster or something.
Yeah.
But I love, yeah, that look of the wings. Even the, isn't it where the Impulse might or the Strike might have a backpack for, with that too?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like, yeah, the swappable packs that they've got. So the
Ale Striker pack, is that what that is supposed to be? See, this is where I lack in Seed knowledge. And that, see, that might be a good idea. I've had, you know, some of our supporters that are Seed fans talk to me about the Seed story, but we need to have a show where we get into like the Seed technologies.
You know, I think that that would be an interesting show, not just because it's not something that we've done, but I don't think it's something that anybody's done. Like I've never seen a deep dive on like the Seed mobile suit design aesthetics and like the functionality the of these
comes from, you know, cause in UC we get Minofsky particles, you know, we get the idea of the type of combat, you know, where the worker, sort of mobile suits, you know, turned into combat.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess it's a flight pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. So let me ask you that. Or, and then another one would be Epion real quick. And let me because yeah, Zionic Shadow shout out got me the real grade and
I still need to build mine.
Oh wow. Yeah, to me it's just like an awesome action figure, like a robot action figure that has a dragon look to it and it is just cool in that way. Steven, and what are some
I was going to say that was one of the things that we talked about yesterday is I'm a big fan of like alternative equipment when it comes when it comes to mobile suit designs. So like the Epion's beam sword is so unique and I mean, I still get goosebumps thinking about listening to Rhythm of Motion while the Epion swings up and like cuts the battle station barge in half. Like that is one of those like all time anime scenes, right? It's one of the anime scenes of all time. and similar to that, it's like the Shenlong and the Ultron Gundams from Wing with their like pole arm style weapons. Like I love alternative type of weapons. So that's not just a beam saber and a rifle, you know, there's like anything that kind of explores alternative weapon styles, I think is very interesting.
You would like 00 then.
I like 00.
Each mobile suit kind of has its own weapon style.
They do. And you know what? It reminds me a lot of like that anime Ronin Warriors where like, Yeah, they all have like their own weapons associated with them.
Yeah.
But another design element that I like in Wing, and I know that this is kind of an unpopular opinion, but I like the way that like the faces look on a lot of the mobile suits. In particular, I love the Ares. I love that the Ares being a flight type mobile suit has like what looks like a fighter pilot's jet mask. It's like got like the tube, like as if it's got oxygen, which doesn't make sense because it's
a mobile suit. No, that's a good point. That's the one thing I thought too when I first saw that in Wing was like that's pretty cool design for it had good designs in there. But it's interesting because Wing had the combination of like goofy out there designs with kind of grounded, like realistic designs.
And then of course the character designs are just completely off the rails. Like, you know, you've got a guy dressed like a clown, you've got a guy in a blue tank top that's running around with a sword, and it's like,
yeah.
And then what are those bike shorts that Hero's wearing? Like, was that supposed to be tactical? Like, I don't.
It is funny. I tell you, it is funny to sit and kind of think of like the tone disparity that can happen with these shows when, you know, I think that's what it is. It's almost like an anime does that where it can just have so many different tones working at once. And it seems like with Western animation, it's like the storytelling has to be grounded in something, even if it is humor, but it's usually grounded and doesn't really steer far from that.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't get much wiggle room.
Yeah, and that reminds me of the complaint people had with Double Zeta, because it starts to get goofy. And then there's those one or two scenes in the original UC where then the animation is drawn like Wile E. Coyote for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, but I think that's, and like,
you've got the Zeta more, doing its like,
yeah, like exactly. Punches. That's a good, that's actually a good example too. And so that's something that I think is just accepted because maybe that's just part of the charm of animation to heighten a certain situation.
Yeah. It's part of the exaggeration, part of that stylization that we were talking about earlier, you know? But yeah, I see that the chat is giving us a hard time for not talking about G Gundam more.
I was thinking that, but I mean, I get it. A Taurus is a good one. You know, I get it with G Gundam. To me, G Gundam is more like, these are like specialized samurai or ninja. Like, instead of, to me, it's a person in a costume, even though it's a robot. Like, that is almost too far removed from robot for me.
A little bit, you know. I think that a more, if you were going to try and go like grounded, realistic version of G Gundam, you would get something like the Jaegers from...
Oh yeah,
Pacific Rim. From Pacific Rim, because it's like, you know, the Russian one is Cherno Alpha, and so it's like got this nuclear power plant looking shape to it, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, there was like that sort of nationality derived culture aspect that was imbued into the designs of the mechs. And it's the same thing with G Gundam, right? It's like with the Tequila Gundam, it's like it's Gulf Coast, it's aquatic, it's, you know. And then same thing with the Nether Gundam, you know, the
Dutch one.
It's like, oh, well, they have windmills over there. So
it's less about a robot and more of like, what are some goofy things to put on this to make it, you know, that reminds me, and I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of this, but that movie from the late 80s or early 90s, it was that.
Oh, Robot Jocks.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, love Robot Jocks.
That's interesting, because that's one where it almost is like G Gundam, but it's still pulled back to be a little more grounded still.
And it had that same sort of tone design to the mecha, right? Like the American mech was this red, white, and blue, you know, all American looking thing. Whereas like the, I don't even know what country was Alexander from. Because it was like a post-apocalyptic world, so it was like, it wasn't Russia, but it was like some kind of
I don't remember. Germanic. I need to watch that again, because I did watch it maybe about a year ago.
You had a really good G-Watch episode on it.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was we had it, the G-Watch. Mesopotamia. Oh, so King Dylan saying Mesopotamia. That's pretty interesting.
That is interesting. So, where does that black and gold color scheme come from on the...
Yeah.
On his mech. I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Anyway, I think it was neat to kind of, talk about non-UC Gundams for a little bit. I think it would be cool sometime we then focus in on maybe a specific group of suits and just kind of dive into our thoughts on them. And then another thing to dive into are the mechanics of certain AUs anyway. Like, I think Afterwar is under talked about, but like
definitely
has a lot of neat stuff going on, and I feel like it'd be cool to explore that a little more.
Yeah, and I think one of the weaknesses of a lot of the AUs, not, and this isn't like their fault or anything, but as a result of them only having limited runs compared to like all of the various UC shows, we don't get that same sort of like technology tree that you and I love to look at, where it's like, oh, I see where, you know, Zimad branched off and made like the Ifrit, and then they also made the aquatic mobile suits, and you have like this whole like development tree of the history of a mobile suit as it's been kind of refined over the years. Compared to like the AUs, it's just like,
yeah, there's not, it's just here's, and isn't that interesting how it's like we're presented with a story, and then there's someone that's like, cool story, but that character there, can you tell us where they came from? Why are they wearing clothes like that? And how does that?
Why is Kira dressed like a biker?
Yeah, it's very interesting how we really like that stuff. You know, is part of it, we're just trying to make sense of something that is not true, but maybe we can make it make more sense to us. And then maybe if you do that, find a connection to it that resonates with you. Maybe that's what it's about. Like, if we're able to find sense into something, even if we need more details than necessary, it allows us to have a deeper connection with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to bring it full circle, it's about immersion, and you don't want to be ripped out of the story by weird plot elements. And so, yeah, you and I were just talking about it, where it's like, you want the world to be believable. You don't necessarily have to believe that that world exists, but you have to believe that that world can exist. And so when you have elements, whether it's the story or even in the mechanics, that stand out as like sore thumbs, like, well, why is that? If you're a storyteller and you're like a mecha designer, you better have the answer to that question. Otherwise, the people that are watching it are going to be like, this doesn't do it for me.
That's what's interesting. It's almost like, stories don't necessarily need background information or to be tied together. But if you want a long lasting relationship with the people that you want to take in, it's good to add those types of elements to it. That's like, so like if a corporation was like, well, let's make some new world, you know, it's like, okay, well, if you have the basic story, let's give us that supplemental material that you can charge us for. And give it. And it's funny because I don't think these things are ever done good. You know, when they've talked about doing like a movie and a game and a toy line, like come out at the same time, but not in terms of like the game is just based on the movie and then they're like almost do it where they're all complementing each other. I think Gundam generally does it actually pretty good compared to a lot of IPs, just because you can kind of, collectible video. Like I can find 1/18th Gundam stuff, you know?
And you're very much free to kind of take what you want and leave the rest.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that there's with some other franchises and IPs, like you kind of have to be bought in on the whole thing in order
for you
to enjoy it.
That was the problem with Halo. Like people loved Halo and they did a great job with the franchise. I think until the movie or the show came out, which is interesting because they did an excellent job with the fighting, the special effects. But when it came to the story, they were just telling some new different story that was like, well, that didn't happen. You know,
isn't necessarily a bad thing, but like then don't use the characters that are from the games. Like you can tell that story, but tell it about like a random Marine. Don't make it, you know, John Halo.
Well, the fact that they took off John Halo's helmet is like, maybe that would be okay if the rest of the story like was really about Halo. And they're like, okay, what's the concession we make? Well, let's at least have the audience more connected with the face. Yeah. But if they, like, it's interesting, if they decided not to take off his helmet, maybe I would be okay with some of the story just being cringy and different, and because it's like, well, at least they're keeping the action and, you know, but that's a cool actor. And I just feel happy for him that he gets to play this character, even if people hate it.
I feel bad because he is a great actor, but the only thing that I know him from is like one of the bad guys on Law & Order SVU. He was like a recurring bad guy on SVU. Oh. And so I'm like, wow, you mean to tell me that Master Chief has committed sexual assault on people?
Wow, 'cause something sort of like that came up in another show he was in. I want to say he was in Orange is the New Black or whatever. The prison show, and I think he was a prison guard. And then he was also in The Wire, season 2 of The Wire.
I never watched The Wire, but I've always heard good things.
You got to watch it. Season 2 is completely different, and you're like, what the? But then it's like, okay, that's actually pretty good. And you need to check out The Wire.
And I hear Idris Elba's in it. I'm a big Idris Elba fan.
Yeah, so. You know what? You just convinced me I'm going to watch that again because we finished Columbo. Just
go back and watch. All right, everyone, we're coming to the top of the hour. Go.
I'm leaving. I'm going to go watch The Wire.
Yeah. Let's go watch The Wire.
No, we need a new show after we finish Columbo. I've already seen it, but my wife hasn't seen The Wire, so that's probably a good idea. Okay, well, you know what? I think that's it. We did a good job filling this time. I really liked brainstorming about the Amiibo thing because I would spend so much more money and have more practical reasons that I would want to buy collectibles if I could connect it with all the other things I'm buying.
Is this thing on? Is Bandai listening?
Like- yeah. But also, I'm glad we kind of dived into talking about some suits outside of UC. I want that to be a regular thing, maybe, to learn more about it. So, if you are a fan of AU suits and you want to maybe contribute in some way, just send me an email with what you want to talk about. Maybe something I'll read on air. That's gunnamexplained at gmail.com. So,
sweet.
Okay, well, that just about does it. Thanks a lot, Steven. Thanks a lot for everyone that watched.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of the week and weekend. We'll talk later.
Cheers.